Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Before I talk about trans people and NE specifically, I thought it would be useful to reflect on why we chose the title for today's event, Promoting Health for the Region's Wealth. Because some people might wonder what is the connection between health and an economic strategy for the region. Well, to me, it always represents a double whammy, that if people are not healthy and well in themselves, then there's obviously going to be a cost to our economy. There's a cost in terms of the money spent by PCTs on dealing with chronic illness. There's money spent by local authorities and social services budgets, which come straight out of our council tax. There's a cost to the exchequer, which reflects in our taxes for providing benefits, keeping people on incapacity benefit or disability living allowance. There's an overall loss of productivity, and that includes, of course, not just the person who's unwell or unable to go to work, but also the people who are involved around caring them, the people that they live with. There's a loss of direct and indirect taxes because people who are not healthy and going to work and earning lots of money are not actually going out and buying things either. They're not paying VAT. They're not contributing to the community. And overall, there's a general loss of community vitality because you have people stuck at home doing nothing when they should actually better be off, be out, taking part in society and actually making it a much more fun place to be. And that's actually before we even start to count the personal cost. So I think that promoting people's health, their long-term health, their lifelong health, is a very vital part of ensuring that in this region, the Northwest, that we have a good and just society in which everybody is equally able to reap the benefits. And if you look at the recently published Equalities Review report by Trevor Phillips, Trevor says in the introduction, in terms of health and healthcare, we know that some groups experience poorer health than others, and we know that there's a strong association between poor health and other factors, such as educational attainment and employment status. But because the data are so poor in many areas, we simply don't know enough about the differences in health between different groups, nor do existing mechanisms allow us to assess the extent to which healthcare provision meets the needs of different groups. Now, I'm actually going to address that in a moment because in this topic, we actually do know quite a lot, and therefore there's things that we can actually do about that. But let's move on a little. I want to challenge another idea about minorities and the majority. I don't think there is a majority in our society anymore. I think we have a society that's made up of lots of smaller groups. If you look at the population of the Northwest, which is about 6.8 million, half a million of those, around 7%, have a BME heritage. 20% of the population have a disability. 30%, and I count myself among this, are over 50 in 2001. Up to half a million people, that's about the same number as the BME, are LGB or T. And within that, I would estimate that between 500 and 700 people in the Northwest have a trans background. So it's estimated that by 2010, only 20% of the workforce will fit the stereotype of being white, male, non-disabled, and under 45. So when we address health issues, we cannot address them towards some mythical majority with a one-size-fits-all approach. If we're actually going to spend our money wisely on promoting people's health and ensuring its continuance, then we actually have to look in terms of the needs of individual groups rather than thinking we know the answer from a stereotypical idea of what's normal. Because unless we do that effectively, unless we know the individual needs of those groups, then the money we spend on things like smoking cessation campaigns, on cutting down misuse of alcohol and misuse of drugs, that money is wasted on large portions of the population. And I know that the other speakers this morning are actually going to highlight some of those points. But if I take it personally now, As a transsexual woman, if you're looking after my health, should you be inviting me for regular breast scans? Actually, the answer is yes. Should you be inviting me for regular smear tests? Any guesses? No, the answer is no. Should you be checking, inviting me to have prostate checks? Now, this is a surprising one. Yes. And then if you would reverse that, if you take a colleague of mine like Stephen Whittle, who's a trans man, what are the answers to those types of health promotion questions that apply in his case? Also, from my trans experience, I think we have to make sure that healthcare professionals and social care professionals are actually dealing with the issues that people have rather than allowing their label to obliterate everything else. I have a colleague who's got a serious knee problem, and when she was referred to a specialist recently, the referral letter spent two paragraphs describing her transsexual background. Now, I'm not sure what actually being transsexual has to do with having a dodgy knee. But it was only in the third paragraph, having set the scene for the specialist to begin to see this person in a different light to begin with, that the GP actually got round to explaining to the specialist what he was sending Angela to see him for. Similarly, whenever I visit my doctor, I know that before too long there's going to be a question. He's absolutely determined to take me off hormones. I don't know why, because he hasn't a clue what would actually happen if he did, but he's got this idea in his head, and therefore we've actually got a lot of education to do. So the question really is, how are you going to ensure my long-term health? How are you going to ensure that all the trans people in the Northwest who probably secretly fear getting old and the possible onset of dementia and the loss of control that that involves, how is that going to be dealt with? Are we planning to actually to serve those people? Or because it's only 500 or 700 people, doesn't that matter? Should we just leave all those people collecting benefits and excluded? I just want you to remember that transsexual people have only one gender reassignment, but we have an entire life. And that healthcare is for that entire life. So let's not just think about gender reassignment. But who are transsexual people anyway? Well, I can tell you that we've existed throughout history. We appear in every society around the world. More than one culture in the world has more than two genders. One culture actually has seven. God knows how you organise a date in those circumstances. We also know that physical intersex conditions are far more common than imagined. And in some societies, some people have a huge regard for people who I would describe roundly as being gender variant. It's only in 20th century Western medicine that we've actually decided to label people like myself and Stephen and some of the other people in this audience as sick or dangerous. I want to emphasize that being different isn't a mental illness. Because if it is, looking from where I'm standing, looking at all you, many of you have actually got big, big problems. History is full of examples of psychiatry volunteering to keep people in their places. When I was growing up, it's a shock to me to realise that when I was starting senior school, we were still putting unmarried mothers into mental health institutions because they had violated that expectation of society. And we were still labelling sexually active women with a false made-up condition called nymphomania. And I'd like to remind you what Alfred Kinsey said about nymphomania. A nymphomaniac is someone who's having more sex than you. So, again, from where I'm standing, you're all nymphomaniacs. Of course, mental health also set out to do society's work where it came to gay men as well. Although homosexuality was legalised in 1967, it was many more years. In fact, not until the mid-80s when homosexuality was finally removed from psychiatric textbooks. I'm afraid that transsexual people are still in there. But just because psychiatrists insist on believing that I've got a mental illness because I'm different, please don't let that influence the rest of you, because we've come an awful long way if we're mad. In fact, The current model of transsexual people, on the medical model of how to treat us, is tremendously skewed. And it's skewed towards control of people rather than actually all the things that we now hold dear in healthcare. We talk extensively about autonomy and independence, patient-centered care, all these sort of human rights concepts. But they're actually all absent in the way that transsexual people are treated. Now, I'm in danger of rambling on for too long, so I'm actually going to skip over a little bit of that. And I know that my colleague Stephen is actually going to cover a little of that later. But I do want to emphasize that, for instance, not all transsexual people seek surgery, or not all trans people seek surgery. And I do want to emphasize as well that those who do, don't regret it. If they have reservations about the treatment they've had, it's about the shoddy nature of it. It's about the way that they've been required to jump through hoops for many years to actually... I mean, what other form of health condition requires people to undergo an endurance test in place of care? But that's actually what regularly happens when we transship people from the Northwest to a gender identity clinic in London. I met one only this week when I was on the train down to London. My face is quite familiar to transsexual people, so lots of people usually come up to me. So I sit down on the train, somebody's passing, oh, hello, it's Christine Burns, isn't it? Yes, where are you going? Oh, I'm going down to Charing Cross Gender Identity Clinic. Why is that necessary? Why is that necessary for people with this particular condition to have to go 200 miles to London on the train? Why are we making Richard Branson rich because we haven't got adequate provision in the Northwest? And actually, why are the Northwest's PCTs making a hospital trust in London inordinately rich by signing a blank check to them? Because the irony is that actually you can do the care very well on our own doorstep. Most of what is involved, most of what transsexual people seek in order to achieve their life goal can actually be done within normal PCT resources, perhaps with a little bit of professional development. But the issue is then transformed, because issues like having a choice, presently people don't have a choice of where to go. You can go to that place or that's it. Well, that's not what we're actually saying is the right of people to use the health service. People have to wait inordinately long to actually get onto those services. Well, for everybody else in the community, we talk about actually having access within a reasonable period. Not having to wait, as in some cases, 3 years, but being able to be seen within 6 months for a first appointment. So there's a lot we can change. Give you some facts and figures. Intense gender variance, the sort that actually drives people to actually request assistance with modifying their bodies to be able to present successfully as a member of the gender that they think they feel themselves to be, that actually affects about 1 in 11,900 of the adult population. And that means about 4,000 to 5,000 people in the UK as a whole. So that's a figure that's also supported by the government's research. And as I said, it means around 500 to 700 in the Northwest. But that's just transsexual people. That's people who actually are defined in terms of being supposed to be pursuing gender reassignment. But lots of other people, and we'd actually, to be honest, we don't really know how many there are, have issues about their gender. In fact, if you ask people in general, would they specify themselves as being at one end of a spectrum, absolutely, utterly, femininely female, and absolutely, utterly, butch male, people don't place themselves there. Gender's a continuum. They actually place themselves in between. Well, there's a lot of people towards the middle of that continuum for which that's an issue because of the way our society is constructed. They need help and support and people listening to them to find out how they would actually like to accommodate their experience of having a gender, which is something that we all have, into their life. But actually, what do they have instead? Well, I'm not going to steal too much thunder from my colleague later, but some recent research identified that because of the lack of help that people receive, up to 34% of trans people have at some point in their life considered suicide once or twice. That's not because they had treatment and regretted it. No. In fact, that's very much the opposite. People who've had treatment are generally very pleased with the fact that they've had it. It's As I said before, they're not pleased with the quality, but they're pleased with the fact that they've had it. 20% of the people we've spoken to say that they've experienced a GP being unhelpful towards them. 6% of those have actually said their GP actually categorically refused to treat them. Now, who are these people? Because my taxes are paying for those people. And it's our health service, it's everybody's health service. I didn't know we actually employed general practitioners or anybody within the health service to make moral decisions on their own back, on their own ignorance, as to who they're to treat. There's a lot to do there in terms of adjusting the health service as a whole to be inclusive of everybody. I'm pleased to say that 60% of people do say actually their GP would like to help them, but actually they say that in those cases, generally the GP says they don't actually have the knowledge to be able to do so. So that's another area in which we need to adjust services to help. It doesn't have to be that way. The majority of treatment, as I've said, can actually be performed locally for people. We can develop GPs with special interests. It's not rocket science, it's just a little bit of professional development. And we can say, the irony is, we can actually provide people with better care at the same time as costing local health providers less money. It's an awful lot cheaper and easier to treat somebody locally with their own resources on the doorstep than to actually ship them down on a pendolino to London. I think I need to wrap up. So in summary, I would say that for trans people, health is for life. It's not just for a sex change. We need to educate people within health and social care, and we need to eradicate exclusion. We need to redesign our services locally. We need to make them patient-centred. And we can save huge amounts of money, public money, in doing that, that we can spend on other things. Overall, we need to target care by understanding people's needs. Thank you very much.